Veterans Voice is a show that connects veterans and active members of the military to qualified guests who help you find programs and benefits you qualify for and discuss housing, education, career training, and other topical matters. Every show addresses issues that affect your life. Call in and share your experience. 781-837-4900.
Welcome, 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 everybody. Greg Brasso, your host of Vietnam. It's Vietnam Veterans Night here on Veterans Voice Radio. We've got a great show. I've been looking forward to bringing this show together. Several years ago, we did a three-show series on Vietnam. It ran five nights. That's how powerful the show was, and how unbelievable one of our guests that's back again tonight was, and our dear friend Mike Cunningham, who couldn't make it tonight, but he's going to be at our big festival at the Writer's Corner talking about the virtues of writing and what it does for people. But before I welcome back our guests, Justin, thanks a lot for coming in tonight, brother.
Hey, Greg, thank you very much. Nice to be here. And honored to be here with these two fine gentlemen.
Yep. Well, it's a Veterans Voice honor to have two Purple Heart veterans in our presence at the same time. And Jenny, you all, welcome, Jen. Thanks for coming in tonight, dear.
No problem. Just back from the Mass State Coalition for Suicide Prevention conference and got all kinds of new information.
All right. Well, we'll ask you to share that with us for sure. Because next week we're going to be delving a little bit back into the mental health world. It's going to be Parkinson's Night, National Parkinson's Alliance? What are they? National Parkinson's
Foundation?
Foundation. Yeah, I guess there's so many different foundations and institutions, and we got Michael J. Fox Foundation coming in a couple of months, and all these other folks. But Gino, thanks for putting us on tonight. And
my pleasure to be here, sir. Yeah, you're great. Presence of these excellent veterans.
Well, you do a great job.
Thank you, sir.
And now, before I get too carried away, we need to welcome back not Mr. Carter, but somebody that means a lot more to me than Mr. Carter. Mr. Carter, here's Mr. Oliver, Mr. John Oliver, back from too long a period of time.
Thank you.
Back from a long sleep almost, John, huh?
Oh, that's right.
Well, welcome, John. Tell us a little bit about yourself, John.
I went to Vietnam in 1968. I was drafted in 67 and arrived in Vietnam just before the Tet Offensive.
Oh, and, good timing.
As I said, I arrived at the wrong place at the wrong time, just in time.
Yeah.
And spent 8 months in Vietnam, was wounded, and left there and went to Boston College.
Very, very nice. And now you return to Boston College on a regular basis.
The last few years I've been going to Boston College because the history of the Vietnam War is the largest course at Boston College, the largest class, too. There's over 150, maybe 200 students. And the professor who teaches that class, Dr. Seth Jacobs, is excellent. He knows more about Vietnam than anyone, I think, that I've met. And he does a great job presenting that. All the viewpoints on the war,
and you go in as a guest.
Once a year, I'll go in and lecture on my experience and my what happened in Vietnam when I was there.
Very, very nice, and it's well received.
Well, yeah, it must have been good last time because for the first time he hugged me when I was
like, oh boy,
in front of the students.
So. No, very nice. Hey, you know, John, it's never too late. It's never too late.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't mean anything, John. I don't mean anything. Okay. But sitting beside you is another Purple Heart recipient, another hero that not only served his time in the Army and in Vietnam, but has since served the veterans community for about 200 years. Peter, well, welcome. First time in studio, Peter. Thanks for making your way in.
Thanks, Greg. I deeply appreciate the invite, and it's nice to sit and meet John. And I know Justin. Justin's the commander of my chapter of 207, Vietnam Veterans of America.
Yeah, great.
First time meeting Jenny, which was great. And I know Gino from before, and I've known you since the inception of the Veterans Voice Radio.
I know, Peter, and thank you very much. You know, you're my mentor. I mean, I call you once a week just about. With some new cockamamie idea, and you either tell me to get lost or you give me some great advice and you tell me, okay, call this one and call this one and call that one and see how appropriate that might be. But you work for the VA, Peter, for a number of years. Did you not?
34 years with the VA and worked in the regional office in the Kennedy Building. I worked in benefits. Initially, when I was hired by the VA, I was a benefits counselor. And while I was a benefits counselor, I was going to grad school to finish my master's degree in counseling. And eventually I was hired to a position as a counseling psychologist in VA Voc Rehab, where I worked in Voc Rehab for 27 years and had the fine fortune in that job to help many, many of my fellow veterans over a long time.
What a tremendous group that the Voc Rehab is, and what kind of a misunderstood service, it seems. Maybe underutilized? I mean, people that, it's like people don't know about it and ask for it. It's like the counselors have to tell the appropriate veteran, oh, you might qualify for Voc Rehab.
Well, you know what happened with Voc Rehab? The Voc Rehab and GI Bill were always a separate entity where you really couldn't mix your GI Bill with the Voc Rehab. But in 2009, when the VA Chapter 33, the current GI Bill, came into play, what they let happen was veterans who become eligible for Voc Rehab were eligible to elect to receive the housing allowance that they would have received under the GI Bill.
Oh, wow,
what they did was increase the percentage of veterans who had been service-connected who hadn't opted to get into Voc Rehab. Get into Voc Rehab, because in Voc Rehab they pay everything. When they write a rehabilitation plan for you, they write everything.
Yep.
They pay the government.
And what is Voc Rehab all about, Peter?
Voc Rehab, it's now under the VA. It's called Veterans Readjustment and Employment. They changed the name. They kept the acronym, the VR&E acronym. They changed the name. So it's basically to help a veteran overcome their impairments from their disability issues. In essence, to obtain, maintain, retain employment in some way, shape, or form to get back into the workforce.
So maybe new training involved?
A lot of new training. It could be any type of new training. They write what they call it IWRP, which is an Individualized Written Rehabilitation Plan. And under that plan, the plan tells the veteran what the VA is going to do, tells the veteran what the vendor who's going to help them get services is going to do, and it tells them what is the expectation of you as the veteran to be successful in that particular program.
When I was with ITT Tech, I was responsible for recruiting veterans and worked with the Voc Rehab folks a little bit, and I know one of the kids was going to school for some sort of drafting program or CAD design, something like that. But Voc Rehab stepped up. They bought him a big, fanciest of all computers, a big, big printer that would print blueprints, giant blueprints.
A plotter.
A plotter, exactly, Gino. So Voc Rehab really in it, and so it does it. Help you to find what you're good at, Peter? Do you go through some testing a little bit?
Oh, yeah, the VA, the Voc Rehab process is that when you apply, they do a whole evaluation to determine your entitlement and eligibility to services, and then they work with you through the process of the overall interviewing process that they have done to determine how they're going to assist you.
Okay.
And it isn't that they tell you you're going to do something. What happens, it has to be a mutual agreement.
Sure.
The government allows you to do certain things spending-wise under Voc Rehab, but in today's world, it's pretty much, if you came into me, okay, and let's say you've got a bachelor's degree in an obsolete thing that you can't get a job, and you've got a serious disability issue, and you and I sit down and talk about it. Well, could you do something like go to law school? And so the VA would write a rehabilitation plan to send you to New England School of Law, Boston College of Law, if you could get into it. You have to take tests to get into
pretty fancy it. Over
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And he lectures at Boston College. You know, he's not like just one of the janitors over there, you know. He couldn't pay his way to get in 20 years ago, and now he's a star.
So basically, a veteran could end up with a rehab plan. There's plenty of veterans who are attorneys in the state of Massachusetts who went through voc rehab successfully and or used their GI Bill.
Nice.
And
very nice.
The whole point of it is that Vietnam veterans had the opportunity to participate in a lot of different things when they got out of the military. Some of them they couldn't get into, which we were just talking about a little bit before, about getting into service organizations, stuff like that. But they could certainly apply for service-connected benefits. They could get benefits, and if they applied for benefits and they ended up with a service-connected disability, 10% or more, then they can apply for vocational rehabilitation.
Yeah, but the difference, I think, Peter, between now and 55 years ago, I know when I got out, you know, I don't remember getting that booklet you were showing us earlier. Maybe I did get it. And I
yeah,
just
but
threw
it's
it
like
trash.
Fred Flintstone printed it, for God's sake.
I'm just saying,
you know,
it was a whole different world. You know, they didn't come and say, hey, we've got this, you know, I got home on a Friday and Monday I was out, I think, landscaping. I mean, you went and got a job, and it took me 2 years before I decided, well, maybe I'll go to college, and I had to go find a campus. Find somebody on campus in financial aid to talk to, and they finally said, are you a veteran? I said, well, yeah. Oh, well, wait a minute. You know, you get some. We'll cover some of it. Unfortunately for those serving today, they get a lot more than we did.
They get a lot more, for sure. Yeah, John.
I remember in 69 when I was leaving the service, and they called me in to say, what do you think your disability, what do you deserve for disability? And I'm totally confused. He says, well, if you get 30% or more, you go to college for free. I says, I think I'm 30% disabled.
and you're right, John. You know what happened? This is where Vietnam vets, they did take care of Vietnam vets a little bit away, because initially in voc rehab, up until the late 70s when Congress passed a new package of legislation, you did have to be 30% to get into voc rehab. Yeah. They changed the law so that you can get into voc rehab at 10%, but you had to have what they call a serious employment handicap. So basically, the terminology changed tremendously, and what it did is created a conduit for more Vietnam veterans who weren't 30% or greater to get into voc rehab.
And I think also when a lot of guys got out, they didn't go for benefits right away.
No.
It took 10, 20 years before they even got 10%. So that whole, you know, that whole cog in the wheel where they were saying you had to be 30%. Didn't matter because a lot of guys just got out and they didn't want to talk about benefits.
They didn't get the book.
At this point, we need to grease the wheel a little bit here and let our sponsors say hello. So, Larry, why don't you take it away? We'll be back to rejoin our Vietnam Memory Night back in a couple of minutes. Take it away, Larry. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. Everybody. Here we are on Vietnam Veterans Night to celebrate our 10-year anniversary here. 10 years ago, we began this exercise, and one of the most important groups that, in my heart, as my age group of Vietnam veterans that might not have been treated as fairly as some other groups, but I think that their perseverance has helped pave the way for many of today's benefit programs that the Desert Storm and the Afghanistan War kids and all the recent discharges veterans are enjoying. So from that standpoint, Justin, John, what's your name, Peter? Thank you. No, there's no age here.
No.
We have cue cards.
Wait a minute, everybody we have to have name tags. Hello, my name is, one of us is missing.
Yeah.
The hippie.
Oh, that's right.
Wolfie. Where's Hippie Drippy?
I don't know. A hippie drippy weather man. He must have got blown away.
What happened?
Get out of town.
See you. See what happens when you leave the door open.
See, this is tonight.
I think you're lighting them.
See what happens. We left the door open.
This is another blessing having these two guys here. I just got a blessing from a Catholic priest. We're Assumption in Weymouth, doing some emergency stuff. On Easter night, there was a big fire in Everett, so I got a blessing. It was beautiful. I said, thank you for that lovely blessing. What is that? He says, that's Allah, that's Muslim.
Yeah.
It's a Jewish kid, and I'm on my way to an Easter service.
Perfect.
So I got it all covered.
You got no matter what.
One more fire, and we'll be in business.
One of those gods going to let you into their heaven. One of them might.
McPhill's the only one who's letting me in.
Which one has the longest hair, do you think? So,
you guys sounded great on the radio. It was really good.
For those of you who couldn't recognize him, that's Wolfie. We're just talking to him, and we leave the door open, and he walks, you know.
To bring back why we're here tonight is, as we know, March 29th was Vietnam National. Vietnam Day. So I know I was out at many of the activities throughout the state and in Rhode Island to observe that. And the biggest thing I came away with was, you know, it's guys like us, our age group and even older, that we have to keep the legacy going. You know, we have to tell the story. And that's why every week it's great when I have guys like you here, because the story has to be told from your point of view. I served during Vietnam in wartime, so my service. We can't let other people tell the story. And I think, John, by you going to the college, you know, the kids are okay when they hear the professor talking, but I think your credibility comes in when you start talking about you were on the ground or you were at, you know, whether you were at a certain base.
That's why
same
he brings
as you,
me
Peter.
In. That's basically
and,
why.
And, yeah, and that's the credibility. And unfortunately, there's about 6 million of us left out of 10 still living. I mean, we're still going pretty strong. But we have to ensure that the next generation of veterans, you know, the Afghan guys, the Desert Storm guys, that they know our story. So when they get to tell 30 years from now, they will hopefully will remind people that, you know, the Vietnam guys did this and they did that.
That's well, important. And keep John's information on your Rolodex, because, you know, John is an accomplished speaker. I'm sure he'd love to come down. Justin does a lot of organizations, a lot of groups and things, and he calls. And we've used Mike Cunningham. Has come down and done a couple of nights with Justin, but I know, John, that they'd love to hear you. Peter, they'd love to hear you as well. I mean, so it's great, but that's one of the soft skills that we promote here, and what happens here is the camaraderie now builds that John knows Justin. Yep. You know, and now John knows Peter.
Yeah.
I don't know Peter. I can't remember his damn
name. His name.
but it shows up on my phone, and I always answer his call. But like you said, Justin, you need to keep the story going.
Yep. Can I add to what Justin was saying?
Absolutely, buddy.
I mean, he hit the nail on the head. The number one priority, I think, for Vietnam veterans, combat veterans, is to tell the truth. And not to make an imagination. Don't get too
you
creative.
Couldn't make it up. It was so crazy.
And that, when you tell the story about Vietnam, you tell the truth. That's all I care about.
And I don't think the kids, so many of the people today, don't realize the conflict that was going on here. You think there's problems between Democrat and Republican today. Yeah. How about the Hawks and the Doves back in the late 60s, your commie pinko, worse than that, run to Canada or whatever, John.
I like to, I remember my mother when I came home being involved in the anti-war movement, and I was never so proud of her as that. Her son has come home and alive, and she was still out there trying to protect other sons, you know.
And that was across the college campuses, which, you know, for those guys, you went a little earlier than I did. So I was at that age where on the campuses you could see that. I mean, just festering. And like I said, my theme was hate the war and love the warrior.
Yeah.
And that to me was the biggest difference, because in World War II, again, we talked about Korea. Unfortunately, those guys just got you know, they were just pushed aside. The service wasn't even talked about. But when the W-2 guys went, the whole country got behind them. You could see that, you know, there was a necessity for them to go. Unfortunately, Vietnam, it wasn't that clear picture of why are we over there in Southeast Asia. And the country was divided right down the middle. That, you know, and it got to the point in the late 60s after the Tet Offense. And then we had My Lai and a few other instances. Then it became hate the warrior.
Yeah.
And to me, that changed my whole outlook on why I went in at 17 to serve, because it just didn't make any sense. Well, how could we hate the young men, my age group, and how could people my age hate other people our age going to do what we thought was right, whether you were drafted or not? Like I said, 50% of those in Vietnam were volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a misnomer from a lot of guys.
I think we were tricked.
Yeah.
I was tricked. I was tricked until I was about 17 or 18. I was such a hawk. I thought we were, it was right to go over there. We're going to kick those commies' ass, you know, Green Berets. It's right, and the commies are looking to take it over. I had no clue until Mike Cunningham told me and this and all of our listeners the history of Vietnam and the history of Ho Chi Minh. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he cooked at the Parker House in Boston and he came to our country looking for help to kick the French out of French Indochina. Mm-hmm. Am I telling kind of the Mike Cunningham story, the side of it, John? You remember. At first, Roosevelt liked Ho Chi Minh and was going to go to bat for him and help them secure their independence. But after Roosevelt died, the feelings changed, and we turned our back on Vietnam, and Ho Chi Minh had to go look for help elsewhere.
But, you know, one thing that came to me, though, and this was just several years ago, I actually got to meet some people who lived in Vietnam during the war, and we went to a ceremony out at the Massachusetts State Monument, and all the Vietnam vets were there, and all of a sudden we saw all these people coming over the hill with signs. And I said, oh, here we go. I figured there's a protest. Yeah. They were all Vietnamese people. And they said, thank you. We love you. Thank you for what you did for our family and us. And it was that, to me, kind of changed that feeling of it was a waste. Yeah, 58,000 of our youngest folks died. But if you talk to the people who lived in Vietnam, South Vietnam especially, they're thankful for what we did, even though we wound up leaving. They're thankful for what we tried to do, I guess.
You know, in conjunction with what you're saying, Justin, an interesting story that Mike Cunningham probably might not have this piece, okay? So one of life's experiences that I had was meeting a gentleman from North Carolina who ended up being one of the counselors at the Vet Center. He was a social worker. His name was Chris Russell, okay? And Chris was in MACV in Vietnam. Well, Chris Russell's father...
Was he up here somewhere?
Yes,
I remember Chris Russell. Okay?
So
yes.
Chris's father was Clyde Russell. Clyde Russell was a famous Army Band of Brother guys. He was like the second out of the plane. He was also the head of the SOG, Special Operation Group, that was initially involved in the starting of the Mekong, or the Vietnam War. And when that happened, Chris ended up living in Vietnam. So Chris, there's actually a chapter in the book Valor in Vietnam by Alan B. Clark. And chapter 14 is called The Reluctant Warrior and talks about Chris Russell and his experience in Vietnam and the fact that he was Clyde Russell's son.
Wow.
And so he was a counselor at the Brockton Vet Center. So he died, unfortunately, Vietnam vet. He had lung cancer.
Yeah.
Non-smoker, lung cancer, and he died very young. Well, let me see. He would have been, that was 2015. He was born in 48, so he was, you know, 67.
Yeah.
And he passed away, but he was passed away while he was doing a job he loved. Yeah. Because he was...
Great guy.
There working with the other Vietnam vets. Yeah, he was a fantastic guy.
Great guy. But, Peter, isn't that the case of the folks that you meet, by and large? I mean, there's a few apples, whatever. But the folks from the VA that come on this show could double their salary if they went somewhere else.
No question. Triple it maybe.
Yeah. Have a better way of life and have a different way of life. But so many of you folks, and I'll say you folks, you members of the VA, you're here because you love being here. And you love talking to guys like John. And even Justin.
And I think Justin's point is that vets are taking care of vets.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And those vets taking care of vets are going to be the future of carrying the message forward. Yep. That vets behind us have to take care of vets.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the key. That's the key for Vietnam. And I don't care what war you were in, or if you wore the uniform, you need to be taking care of the other vets or participating in some way that you can be helping.
Yep. Well, how about if we help ourselves, Larry, to our second break? I think our sponsors need to hear from us, and
so John, if you ever want
we'll
to
be back after up. These messages. Take it away, Larry. Blue on Blue. That was a Bob. Larry, was that a Bobby Vinton song?
Yeah,
Blue on Blue. Blue on Blue. I can't remember Peter's name, but I can remember Blue on Blue.
I think there's seven or eight different colors. Actually, they're going to be on our bus. I'm getting our bus wrapped with the Agent Orange barrels, and it talks about each one, so that should be happening next month.
Agent Orange, boy, that's a something that we made fun of.
2 million gallons were spread, and that was the last batch.
Unbelievable.
Because they kept testing how strong it should be to defoliate.
Well, and it was meant well.
The concept was
clearing the land,
clear the forest, so we can see where the enemy is. That concept was good. It's just didn't realize that, you know, with that comes everything else. No,
the effects we never even knew what could have.
Because they were making stuff to kill stuff.
But they didn't tell us. They didn't tell us. John, you didn't know.
I just got pictures of people walking through defoliated areas.
And now they've expanded to, I was talking about this a while ago, the barrels were put on these wooden crates, and they were shipped over to Vietnam. So the barrels got unloaded, and then they went over to the C-30s. Well, the wood that was there, the guys were taking the wood, and they were putting them in the barrels, and it was cold. They would light the wood on fire and stand over the fire and get warm, and they were sucking up all the fumes in the wood. So, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Yeah. Who was affected?
Those barrels you took showers from.
Yeah. And they used to cut them in half and do your cookouts.
Yeah.
And the guys back in the States, when the C-30s came back, the National Guard guys were on the weekend warriors, no gloves, nothing. They were washing all the stuff off. Thought it was, you know, my weekend duty.
I was a medic on the ones in the United States. He now has prostate cancer.
So. Yeah. I mean, there's really no end. Fortunately, the PACT Act, Peter seemingly the PACT Act addresses a lot of these problems that were foisted on all you vets from back then.
I think the good thing about the PACT Act is that it takes for Vietnam vets included one important thing about the hypertension, but for the whole law as it's written is geared really to bringing out the fact that people in the military are exposed to a lot of different
toxic things.
Yeah.
And those toxic things can carry with a lifetime, just like Agent Orange and what can potentially be happen for Gulf War vets and a lot of them now. I'll tell you, I worked with a guy who died, Gulf War vet, died of brain cancer back in 2007. The PACT Act now makes the brain cancer he died from as a Gulf War vet a service-connected disability.
But and now now we're even looking at genetics, if that can be carried to your children and grandchildren. And that's the next step that we're looking now to see if that is affected down the line, if that somehow affects your genes, and if that's carried in. I know one of the diseases for small kids is under that, but we're going to try to see how we can expand that if necessary. John, you were...
No, I forgot we were on the radio. I didn't know if we were on the radio.
We're on.
Spina bifida.
Right, spina bifida. That was the one, right.
And it's different levels of spina bifida.
And it's very narrow the way they have it. But what I said earlier, we were talking off the air about when one of my guys said he raised his hand and he said, I'm willing to go die for my country. He said, but I wasn't willing to be poisoned by my country. And that's how he addresses the Agent Orange that, you know.
Well, I think that for us vets today, talking to other vets, all the vets that I talk to, the younger vets, I tell them, listen, there's laws out there that protect you now for this stuff happening. You go get on the registry.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, some of them listen, some don't. My next door neighbor, fine guy.
Well, Peter,
Marine
that's
Army
one of the
guy.
Reasons why we have this.
Which is good.
Well, we had July 13th, we're having a giant festival with food and entertainment, the wall that heals, the mobile Vietnam moving wall that's going to be at Adams Field right at the entry to our festival. And, you know, it's to get the word out, Peter, to the young kids now, you know, because now they're seeing the effects of the burn pits, the oil rig fires, and God knows what other toxins
exactly.
they're getting
exactly.
Exposed to.
You know, it's funny. John's mentioning about Boston College, about this class from Vietnam. I wonder how many of those kids who are in that class have grandparents, parents maybe, who were veterans in Vietnam.
I would imagine there's some, yes. Yeah. Well, Adams Field, is that which Adams Field are you talking about?
Quincy.
Quincy, okay.
Adams Field is right at the entrance to Pageant Field, right on... right up the street
Southern.
From the police station.
Justin made a good point about the genetic study for diseases that can be passed on.
Yeah.
Because I had a heart surgery, as we all know, that was genetically passed on. So it's good that they're studying for the veterans.
Yeah, we actually, sad to say, though, we have, I think, I want to say 50,000 samples that are still sitting, I believe, in Seattle. They were taken over 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and the VA... 6 years ago, was passed a law that the VA was supposed to take these samples and start the research, and the secretary of the VA had refused to do it. And now we're trying to get them moved, I think, to the Ohio University to have them mm-hmm. do the study. But it's sad because, you know, veterans went and gave their samples and hopefully to see if this could be passed in genetically.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like the PACT Act took 30 years to do. You know, now we're coming up on over 20 years that these samples have just been frozen in time, waiting to be checked out to see what's going on. And again, you know, we don't want these younger veterans waiting 30 years.
Exactly. That's the key, right?
That's why the PACT Act included it. Originally was just for Vietnam veterans, and we said no, we want it to be all veterans, so these guys don't have to wait 30 years to wait what we had to wait to get some of these diseases looked at.
Well, when you think about it, you know, there were about 9 million people in service
right.
in Vietnam. 6 million are alive. That's what you said.
Right,
yeah,
about 6 million.
Right,
left.
So 1/3 of those vets didn't live to see the 50th anniversary of the withdrawal.
And I'll
amazing,
be honest,
amazing.
And how many died?
Two and a half were in country. I don't know what that number is. I only know the total number. I don't know if it's broken down in country veterans, and I'm sure if it is, that's got to be cut in half, I would think, at least.
Yeah, that's the figure I've seen. And I think the VA's official figure is 2.5, I think.
Right.
And for Massachusetts, it's 55,000 vets.
That served in Vietnam.
That served in Vietnam. Right. That were boots on the ground. Now, that doesn't include Blue Water vets now, because Water vets now all included.
And now Brown Water, going on and on. So as we hopefully... You know, we've got the ball moving forward now. We've got the law, the PACT Act moving forward.
For sure.
Now we just need to come back with the research on how this affects us genetically. And again, not for us as much, but for our grandchildren, children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And for those other veterans behind us, they now can look at their children and grandchildren.
Exactly.
And that's the key, you know.
Well, the key is that we don't forget. And having you three gentlemen on here and now recording this podcast, I'm sure millions, if not hundreds of millions, will be listening to our podcast, as we share our experiences. But, I mean, all kidding aside, folks, we make a lot of jokes here, but nothing could be more serious than the price that the veterans, I think to a degree, all of the members of the military that served during that time all came away with a couple of questions in their mind, questions of why, and some of them unfortunately couldn't accept the brunt of those questions. And as Jenny knows, too many of those vets have decided to take their life. But we hope that the wall that heals. Justin's
permanent wall.
Mainstay with the permanent wall. Where is that, Justin?
It's in Fall River, Massachusetts, an 80% replica. It's in the Bicentennial Veterans Park. It's 385 feet long. It's park is open 24 hours a day. It's just north of Battleship Cove. If you know where Battleship Cove is, goes upstream about a mile, you'll see Bicentennial Park. The wall is there. It's permanent. It opened 2 years ago. And there's only three other 80% walls in the country.
I haven't been there. I have to go.
We need to get you down there, John.
I'll go down, yes.
So we're going to talk off there. We'll talk off.
And also the Gold Star.
The state Gold Star Monument is on site.
It's right there.
And they actually have a 75% Iwo Jima Monument.
Oh, the Iwo Jima Monument.
There's only one other on the East Coast.
It's magnificent.
And then we have...
It's un-frickin' believable.
We have the Korean Monument and the War on Terror. And I think then there's a local gentleman from Fall River, I believe. I think Italian. Not too many Italians there, but I think one of my Italian brothers. There's a monument there, but it's the best kept secret, and it shouldn't be a secret. It should be, especially in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and New England, should be coming out for those who can't travel, unfortunately, to D.C. Yeah. The wall's been open 2 years, and
That's great.
And you know, Justin, me and Wolfie have been talking ever since we've met you and seen that. See, so many vets like John haven't had the chance to get down there, and maybe this year when the weather gets nicer, we can finally get some bus trips going.
I just had two bus loads come from Ludlow last week.
From Ludlow. Did they come in?
Yep, two bus loads came down with their family. And
nice.
We did it was cold, but we did the tour, and then they went over to the battleship for lunch and had a tour over there. But we're going to do a live show there. June 13th.
Oh, is that right? Good.
So we're going to be at the wall June 13th. We'll do a live show there.
Good.
I hope you guys can make that.
Good.
Come down, sit, part of the audience, part of the crew.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah.
Speaking of that, Justin, so with the event in Quincy, would you have handouts?
Yeah, we have a table. Every year we have a table.
The handout. I haven't
Vietnam
gone to the
Wall
table. Yeah.
There'll be a table. And for those who know, Mr. Fox, Brian Fox is renowned artist. He did two portraits. He did one for Band of Brothers, and then for the wall, he did one with the four Vietnam vets coming out of the jungle.
Okay.
And that portrait will be on display.
Wait till you see it. Wait till you see it.
It's magnificent.
They're coming right out of the jungle. And it took him years to paint?
Well, it took a while. He's now actually done a whole series. He's got... a Huey, he has a Bunker, he has a dog handler. He's doing a complete series on Vietnam, and they're all magnificent.
Well, and hopefully he'll be at our festival.
And he's going to be at least at our 13th live show.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get him to be at the festival.
Good,
amazing
good.
Artist. Brian Fox, if you put Brian Fox artist, or you go to our website, VietnamVeteransMemorialWall.org.
He's just incredible. Larry, we need to take our final break, I think, don't we, kids? So why don't we take our last break? We'll come back. We'll let everybody know what's going on tomorrow down in Hull and next week here at the studio. So take it away, Larry. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. Two different vet centers. Thanks, Jen. Jen's out there working hard for us in all her travels. She's passing out the flyers for our July 13th show that we're going to be hosting for our fifth year in Quincy. This year is going to be...
As Al Sullivan would say, it's going to be a really big show.
Wolfie, look out. Rumor has it that there could be a dunk tank.
I'm Brian McPhail
now. No. We've taken a poll, and we voted you. We're going to give you a jar of Head and Shoulders, and have at it, everybody.
We just got to say one serious thing with Jen before we get back to the coffees and all that. Is we're on this group called the Hub. Some suicides in the area. Some of the key players didn't know what to do to take care of the families and for the post. So we tricked Jenny into being part of the Hub and helping out those people. So we need a round of applause for Jen. She saved the day.
Way to go, Jen. We love you, kid.
And now in a silly thing, they got to come to Hull to have some.
And now tomorrow, once again, Wolfie, you have your organized Veterans Coffee for everybody to show up about 9 o'clock at the Hull Life Savings Museum.
Yes, yeah. It's free. It's open. Plenty of parking. You can overlook the Boston Light if it's still there after the storm. And we're going to have the speaker, that World War II fellow that talks about the rifle. Everyone said that's a fantastic thing. I'm going to tell one of Peter's Corny's jokes. I'll probably beat my tail for telling it, but they'll make everyone laugh. And we'll tell a few jokes. And then all the VSOs are going to have a little round table and try and trick all you bullheaded guys into getting the services that you earned and deserve. Somebody might get punched in the nose tomorrow.
So you got some good stuff going on there, Wolfie.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody should attend. You have, what, 20 or 30 vets show up on a regular basis?
To 40 to 50.
Nice, nice. So,
everyone just laughs.
And I got a coffee in Westport tomorrow morning, every Friday morning, Westport, VFW Route 6, coffee every Friday.
What time's your coffee start?
9 to 11.
9 to 11.
Yeah.
9 to 11. I remember, Wolfie, you and I started a food drive-thru once, and we decided to open it up at 11:30 or 12 o'clock, and all of a sudden, 42 months later, we're going bigger and better than ever. We got more people. We had freaking lines last month. We had them all the way to 139. Peter, we had 80 cars in line. Waiting, and we were already open. We were already serving people.
So everyone's going to get here by maybe 10:30, and then they wait in line for a little while. We run them through. So it was 10,000 pounds of food and 10,000 pounds of soda.
All the way down to 139.
Yeah.
I got nervous. I'm looking. I said, "Wolfie," I felt like Captain Queequeg on the boat there. We need a bigger boat, Wolfie. We need some more food. Yeah, I mean, I was getting nervous, but...
So three days next week I'm picking up food, so I'll have it. Sheriff's Department, fresh vegetables, you know, all the regular recruits, also the pet stuff, it's across the board. But the best part is it's really the network that Greg put together, the Veteran Voice Network, the WATD crew. Everyone's just hugging, everyone's just laughing, everyone's telling corny jokes. A few more new jokes, guys. The same old jokes are getting
passed. Well, it's
next Thursday. But, thank you, Gina.
Because
next Thursday.
We get the same volunteers back every month. Nobody leaves.
Yep.
No, unless they have... And Peter, I don't know who smiles more. The people that are getting the food as they're driving away, or the people, our volunteers, that are handing them the food.
Everybody's having a good time.
And knowing what it's going to.
We know what's happening.
And what's happening and the effects. You know, Dr. Joe is going to be on next, that you can affect people's lives, and just by affecting them a little bit. It's all you have to do, and I don't think there's not one people, Wolfie, that doesn't drive through this line starting next Thursday at 10:30 that we haven't affected, and we just want to say thank you if you're a vet, but we appreciate just you being an American, and we're going to help feed you, so come on over next week about 10:30, and... Wolfie and I will do our best to get you fed.
We'll torture you and annoy you, but what we figured out by accident is we want to see Rolls Royces, limousines, Maserati, I don't even know the name of the fancy cars, because we want the people who can't get out to have their neighbors pick up food and drop it off. That's the most important. We got the crew with cars coming out. We need to get the crew that can't get out.
And, you know, with food and insecurities, the way it is, also it's the mental health.
Yeah.
And I always talk about, we always talk about the mental health of veterans. And 988, if you're not doing well, at the prompt, press 1. There will be someone there, a live person that will talk to you. It's 95% of the time, there's 988. It's resolved right at that first call. So if you're a veteran, at the prompt, press 1. And look, somebody's out there. Somebody wants to talk to you. No matter how bad you think things are, just talk to someone. It's 988 at the prompt, press 1.
Well, and we've been encouraging folks to take advantage of that. You don't have to identify yourself. You don't have to let anybody know. We're not going to follow you to your house. There's no Google searches. It's totally transparent and
anonymous.
How did you know what I couldn't think of?
AI.
I was, oh boy, I was struggling. Thank you. Peter.
Auntie
M. But that 988 is a really is a blessing, and if you really feel like you just want to talk,
right?
That's all. And they're going to ask you questions, and they're going to listen.
And that's what that's what the coffees actually do too. You know, we're getting about 15 to 18 veterans every Friday, and sometimes it's different guys coming in. They're stopping in, and I think it's important.
I think I'll be coming down soon.
Good, yeah, absolutely. You know, we always like to see, and you don't have to belong to the VFW. Just happens to be that's the place we use. You can, as long as you're a veteran, come on down. We have actually a couple of non-veterans who come in because one of their dads is a veteran. He's having a tough time. So, you know, we always have our veteran service officer. She's always on site. So if you have any questions, and if we don't have the answers, you know, somebody in that group will pick up the phone and we'll get an answer.
You know, Justin, how about a relative of a vet that has some questions that they haven't been able to get answered?
Well, the kid...
Could that caretaker show up and
absolutely
talk to you and get some information?
And that's the person who showed up the last 2 weeks because she's the caretaker and she needs just as much support.
Yeah.
You know, because she's 24/7. She can't get away from it. So what I actually did is I went and picked the veteran up a couple of weeks ago and I brought him to the coffee and she had an hour and a half to herself. I told her, go do something else. And you know, she needed that.
And the vet loved it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, we came walking in. He said, oh, everybody calling his name. And, he got energized up because, you know, he's pretty housebound.
He's in with all his goombas.
Yeah.
It's important because, I mean, right or wrong, there's nothing like a vet talking to a vet.
That's it.
Yep. And for years, we've been fortunate enough to secure the Cape Flyer train. Memorial Day weekend, we bring about 400 or 500 vets down on the Cape Flyer train, free of charge, down to Hyannis. And
I think it's time to bring them to the wall. I think it's going to be open this year. I'm pushing on it.
I'll get the train.
I will if it's open. We're coming to the wall.
The
stop in Fall River is going to be right across from the Vietnam Wall.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's probably 500 yards.
No kidding.
So, you know, you can't get much better than that. We'll
be awesome.
We'll be updating you before Memorial Day.
Well, and what we saw on our train were that there were a number of older vets that had some problems getting helped on the train. There wasn't a younger vet that didn't stand up helping the vet on,
absolutely,
you know, making sure that he or she got to their seat okay, and then they stopped and talked.
Great.
And then they talked and talked, and then the little kids, you know, would come up and look at, oh, boy, and the father would say, yeah, little Billy, this is John Oliver, the John Oliver Purple Heart recipient. Yeah, this is Peter McPhail, the Peter McPhail. So these are the real deals, folks, and how lucky are we to be surrounded by such heroes here in the studio, and what a great way I want to thank you guys. I don't think the country has thanked you enough, but I'm thanking you and everybody else in the 500 and something live shows. They all thank you and love you, and look, we got all kinds of clocks. We're almost done. Are we on the right stage? Oh boy, we're on the right stage.
Three different blocks and three different times.
Here we go.
We gotta watch the queue. Watch Larry's queue. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and we're on the way out. So thank you very much, John.
Thanks, Greg.
Go ahead, John.
I quickly want to say Justice made a lot of good points here tonight about the genetic study for veterans, where they'll pass on any illnesses genetically. And my son is off. He's a veteran too. He often asks me, Dad, you're not going to pass up on that sarcastic sense of humor to my son, are you?
John, that's why we love you. That's why we love you. Thanks for coming back on tonight. Take care of everybody. Next week, a great show. National Parkinson's Foundation going to be on with a great new study. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.